It's the Nachum Segal Network, and welcome to this edition of Our Community with the United Task Force. As many of you know at this point, the United Task Force is an incredible umbrella organization of many, many wonderful organizations and efforts in our community that are there to help people. And we've had an opportunity to present this segment and to concentrate on some of the services that are being provided around the community for Holocaust survivors during a time when we want to make sure to take care of our elderly and certainly take care of those who've been through the horrors of the Shoah. With us today is Dr. Steven Glicksman. Dr. Glicksman is the Director of Clinical Innovation, Developmental Psychologist at Makor Disability Services. At one point, we knew Makor as the Women's League Community Residences. Again, now it's known as Makor Disability Services. Dr. Glicksman, welcome to the Nachum Segal Network.
Thank you for having me.
A pleasure. Remind everybody what Women's League has done all these years and what Makor Disability Services is doing now.
Yeah, so we started in 1978 as Women's League Community Residences. We were the first group home for people with intellectual disabilities in the Jewish community in the Borough Park area. Yeah. Now we have 32 different residences ranging in scope and size from sort of our old school original group home that still has seven guys in it to we have a home for children with medical frailty and intellectual disability. We have a home for elderly people with intellectual disabilities. We have homes for teenagers, boys and girls. We have homes for men and women. We have apartments with four people. We have about six or seven married couples apartments for people with intellectual disability. Basically, you know, two-bed group homes for people who are married, who need that level of service. We have our care coordination program. We have community rehabilitation, sending staff into people's homes so that they don't need our residential services. We have our Jumpstart Early Intervention Program for 0 to 3-year-olds. We have our ABA Autism Center and ABA Able Home Services for kids with autism who need services. We have our Makor College Experience Program in partnership with Yeshiva University. We have our Creative Business Resources, Supportive Employment for people with intellectual and developmental disability. We really are a lifespan social services organization meeting the needs of people with intellectual disabilities and their families.
You know that we here have been familiar with Makor, Women's League, et cetera, over the years. But it's good to be reminded once in a while because it is an amazing list of services you provide all through, as you said, the majority of what you're providing through these residences and taking care of people at so many different stages of life. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and it's and you know, we changed our name to Makor because you know, from Women's League Community Residences, because we do so much more than just community residences, and because we are not technically a league of women, but the and Makor meaning source for services.
Right.
But the reality is that the fact that the heart of our program remains those community residences, with that emphasis on community, or our supportive employment program, or our college experience program, where people with intellectual disability who, for many, many years, were excluded from so many different parts of life, so many different aspects of the community, to really be there helping people be included and involved and welcomed as neighbors, as friends, as family members. It's a really special organization.
Well, sounds like Makor is as strong as ever, frankly.
Thank God.
That is the impression we are getting. Dr. Glicksman is here, Director of Clinical Innovation, Developmental Psychologist at the Makor Disability Services. Let's jump into our theme as we present our community with the United Task Force, and that's the services that are being provided for Holocaust survivors. Are there specific services, or as a byproduct of all the work you're doing in the community, are there survivors who are being serviced? How would you categorize that element of Makor services to the community?
So I'll tell you, when we first opened in 1978, one of those original seven guys that moved into that group home was identified as a Holocaust survivor. He's still with us, Jacob. I say identified because he was actually born in a displaced persons camp soon after the war.
Right.
And that's relevant because when you talk about services for people with disabilities in terms of Holocaust survivors, we certainly have children and grandchildren of Holocaust survivors that we service. But there really weren't all that many people with intellectual disability who survived the Shoah.
Correct.
For obvious reasons.
Right.
Because
they weren't given the opportunity to survive the Shoah.
Right. The T4 program, the Nazis medical euthanasia program, was started prior to the mass murder of other populations. Hitler really tested the people's taste for atrocity by focusing on people with disabilities.
Right.
And to some degree, the way I like to look at it is that when you go, for example, to Creative Business Resources to hire somebody with a disability, or when you bring a child into our early intervention program because you recognize that the child might have a delay, might have a difference, might need services, that you should, you know, not try to hide, but rather address. When you welcome a group home or supportive apartment on your block, then just like when a Jew puts on tefillin today, or when they open a shul, they're beating Hitler, they're fighting Hitler. So too, when you welcome people with disabilities, that's what you're doing. You're continuing that. Even the field of intellectual disability was so impacted by the Holocaust in ways that really reverberate to today. Even the definition of some of the diagnoses that we have today, when you look at the history of autism, for example. So if you like look back and you know the story, when McCore first started Jumpstart Early Intervention, the prevalence rate of autism was something like 1 in 10,000. Now the latest is something like 1 in 68. And when you ask, well, how could that be? So one of the main reasons, just for the record, one of the main reasons is not vaccinations.
Right.
But one of the main reasons is because we're so we've to some degree expanded the definition, that we recognize autism as a spectrum disorder, that there's some very intelligent, talented, gifted people who have the social deficits and the communication that go along with autism. And if you think back to why didn't we see that earlier? So the fact is that autism was first described in the 40s. In 1943, I believe, Leo Kanner from Johns Hopkins University published an article talking about kids that he was working with that he labeled as autistic. And for whatever reason, the kids that Dr. Kanner worked with were the lower functioning, most profoundly involved group. That's who he worked with. That's who he saw. So he described autism as a really devastating, disabling condition. At the same time, in Vienna, there was another doctor, Hans Asperger, and he also worked with kids with autism, and he published a paper literally the same year, and he described autism as much higher functioning, as people, he looked at them almost as like little professors, that he that had real gifts and talents.
Savants.
Yeah.
In a way.
So for some reason, Kanner's definition kind of made it into the field, and Asperger was kind of lost. So autism was seen as this really disabling, really devastating condition. As the years went by, people began to realize that there was this higher functioning group that eventually got that label, Asperger syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
But the question of why Asperger didn't, like, why he only saw the high functioning and why Kanner only saw the low functioning, it was a question that people asked. And doing further research, it became apparent that Asperger really did recognize it as a spectrum. He really did see in his clinic the higher functioning and the lower functioning. But he only talked about the higher functioning. And for many, many years, people sort of looked at him as a hero of the community, because the assumption was that the reason he spoke about the higher functioning group and not the lower functioning group is because he was hiding that lower functioning group from the Nazis, because he knew that if he had talked about them, they would come and they would come to get him. Years went by, and somebody was a book came out called Neurotribes, which really described the history of autism, and it really propped up Asperger as this hero of the movement.
For the reason you just mentioned.
And they said, and now look, 70 years later, the rest of the world is accepting autism as a spectrum disorder.
Right.
Really, Asperger was right.
Right.
and that he should be applauded.
Right.
Somebody reading this book said, that can't be. There's no way that somebody stood up to the Nazis. And you see, if you read Asperger's lectures at the time, he like stood up at conferences and said that differences have to be celebrated and you can't disregard people just because. Somebody said it can't be that somebody got so far at the University of Vienna in the 40s and wasn't a Nazi. It just can't be. And they went back and they did more of the research and they found, sure enough, in Asperger's name, that really he wasn't hiding the lower functioning group. He was having them murdered.
Right.
He was sending them off. He was in it.
The Nazis would not tolerate those who were developmentally or intellectually disabled.
So when you think now, when I said that in the 80s, right, when we, mm-hmm. you know, that there were 1 in 10,000 because we didn't recognize autism for what it was.
Right.
Think of how many tens of thousands of people didn't get services
right.
for generations
right.
because of the way.
I never thought that because of this forum discussing the work of the United Task Force and specifically for Holocaust survivors, you would allow me to stumble upon this revelation, which is, in my mind, unbelievable. And that is that as we as a community, and really give credit to all, you know, democratic and free societies that do this, that we, as a community, when we go ahead and welcome those who have disabilities and welcome those who are not intellectually on the same level of what we would call a normal plateau, etc., we are defeating the Nazis. We are going ahead and we are doing exactly the opposite and behaving the exact opposite way that they were behaving. And when we do it within our own community, it makes it even more special. And we see the way the people in our community, Makar and others, are dealing with people like that in such a special way. It's an analysis I never considered till you walked into the studio.
And when, you know, Makar is part of a group called Compass. We're under the auspices of OPWD, the Office for People with Developmental Disabilities, right. New York State. That's where we get much of our mm-hmm. funding.
They oversee you, et cetera.
Although we could use more.
Right. Understood.
So there's this invitation-only group of agencies. There's called Compass, which is basically the state saying, it's giving you a pat on the back and saying, you guys are the ideal agency. You're the model agency. You're the type of agency that we want other agencies to aspire to. That's what Compass is. And because of that, we have certain responsibilities that other agencies might not have. But we also have a lot of opportunities that our agencies don't have in terms of meeting other groups and speaking out and having an impact on the state and meeting with state officials and that sort of thing. We're the only agency in New York City to have this distinction, let alone the only Jewish agency in the state to have this distinction.
This distinction meaning?
Meaning that this Compass Award OPWD gives.
Right. Well, that's something to be proud of.
And thank God, and we're very proud of it. But to follow up on your point,
right?
When we go to these statewide conferences, we send these statewide committees, and we're there with our yarmulkes, and we're there with our tzitzis hanging out, and we're talking, frankly, about how when somebody asks us, well, why do you do what you do? Why do you do it this way instead of that way? Why do you do it, you know, why do you have this approach instead of that approach? To really look back and say, well, I have to tell you, a big part of it is that we're steeped in Torah. That's where a lot of our philosophies come from. And we've had like debates with the state, like, you know, Lahavdil, like, you know, Talmudic debates with the state.
That they want you to consider doing things a certain way.
Yeah.
And you'll say, this is the compassionate way to do it. We know this from Torah and from our tradition.
Right. And they agree with us at the end of the day.
Wow.
You know, at the end of the day, they've rewarded us for this. But the way the Jewish community, the vast majority of the time, treats people with intellectual and developmental disability is a kiddush Hashem throughout the state, throughout the country, throughout the world. And when there are those few unfortunate times when somebody wants to open up a group home and there is a protest and there is a backlash or when somebody comes and doesn't want to marry you because your cousin has some sort of diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
It's very close to agreeing.
It's close to exhibiting the same attitude as others 100%. Have done in history, 100%. Which I totally get. You've given me an interesting perspective on this. I really, I enjoy having learned this from you, frankly. Do you ever encounter, because we're on the subject of Holocaust survivors and dealing with people in that type of situation, you did mention, and it's obvious, that because of the number of Holocaust survivors that you service would be small, as you described earlier, but second and third generation of Holocaust survivors, no doubt you've had an ability to speak with, or those who in those generations who have felt the trauma of being, you know, products of those generations. I would assume you've encountered that.
Right, we have, and one of the hardest types of cases we see are people who heroically have taken care of their children.
Right. And often having had them at an older age, right? That often happens, right?
Right. And now that generation is passing away,
right.
And the siblings come to us and say, look, you know, my brother has been, you know, living with my mother for the last 60 years, and we need help. And my mother, because of her experience in the Shoah, didn't want his name on any lists,
right.
And didn't want any formal diagnosis,
right.
And didn't ever avail themselves of any services.
Right.
Those are the most challenging cases that we get. Because one of the qualifications for having an intellectual disability and a developmental disability in New York State is that you have to have certain cognitive deficits, and you have to have adaptive deficits in terms of being able to take care of yourself. And that has to have occurred prior to the age of 22.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the rule.
Mm-hmm.
So if God forbid, you know, you get even into a car accident at 21 years old and you have traumatic brain injury, and that causes these deficits, so then you can avail yourself of OPWD services. If you get into that same car accident and have that same impact at 23 years old, so then it's very scary. You need very good insurance.
Or nowhere to turn.
Right. So the so when we have these, really at this point, we have 60-year-old you know, siblings coming in with their 65-year-old brothers and saying, what do we do? And they're just not in the system. They're just, there's no piece
no
of
record
paper
of them.
Attached. And we have a phenomenal intake office, and they go through every scrap of paper and notes that were sent home from school. And another thing that a lot of Holocaust victims do is keep everything.
Right.
So they have these records. But literally, I recently, a few weeks ago, got a package that literally had, like, the warning notices from the 1960s, you know, and saying, you know, your child isn't managing in third grade. And it was a family who really did everything they could to keep him out of the system, but at the same time kept enough detailed records that now we can go back and get him eligible for services.
Unbelievable. Well, you have a good intake staff. They're able to do that, frankly. Dr. Steven Glicksman, Director of Clinical Innovation at and Developmental Psychologist at McCord Disability Services. Previous guests have spoken about the task force, the United Task Force, and I would assume that you and your organization also recognize that whenever there's an opportunity to utilize other colleagues and organizations for different resources, et cetera, they make themselves available to you, I would assume.
Yeah, the same way that one of the great benefits of us being a COMPAS agency is that ability to get together with different organizations. So too, the United Task Force, under the able leadership of Dr. Faye Zakheim, allows us to, on a regular basis, meet with other organizations, see what needs are out there, see what how we can help each other. It's another example of the Jewish community coming together to and using all of our strengths and all of our different. You know, the fact that we as an agency servicing people with intellectual disability can sit on a task force for people working with mental illness and JCCs and all the different types of agencies that in so many different ways help the all levels of need in the community. To be a part of that through the United Task Force has really helped us further our mission of helping people with disabilities get included and integrated in the community. And I'll say as a psychologist that, you know, this word integration is an interesting one, because when you talk about integration in psychology, you talk about it like an integrated personality. The word integration means making whole by all different parts of something coming together.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have a, right?
Sure.
So too, when we talk about community integration of people with disabilities, when we talk about that, it's not the people with disabilities that are being made whole by bringing all the parts together. It's the community that's being made whole.
Beautiful.
By bringing all the parts together. So through organizations like MACOR and like the United Task Force, to be able to do that and be part of it is something really, really special.
You taught me a lot today, and I thank you for that. We talk about Holocaust survivors and services and programs. Sometimes we need to be made aware of what they go through as they raise their children and as they continue through life in a normal atmosphere like we have here in the U.S. It's very important. You told us that.
And thank you for the opportunity. We should do it again.
We certainly should.
Dr.
Stephen Glicksman, MACOR Disability Services. You are listening to Our Community with the United Task Force. And, of course, we will wrap up this segment with appropriate selections for everybody out there, especially those in the survivor community, with more coming up, of course, right here at the Nachum Segal Network.
La, 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 la.
La la la. calling, he wishes to return. The little bird is wounded, he cannot fly but yearns. He's captured by the vultures and is crying bitterly. Oh, to see my nest again, oh, to be with thee. The little bird of silver, so delicate and rare, still chirps among the vultures, outshining all that's there.
More, and the